a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hi, I'm Rosie Farthing, and I'm asking Adam Avison some questions today. Adam, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks.
Okay, well, your field of research is about massive stars.
Yep.
Currently, what is the accepted star formation model?
So, you start out with a giant molecular cloud, which is about 20 to 100 parsecs size. And they're cold. They've got temperatures of around 10 to 15 Kelvin. And they contain about a million solar masses of matter, mainly molecular hydrogen and dust and things like that. And within these giant molecular clouds, there's a substructure called clumps, which are the regions of star formation. And then within these clumps, there's an even smaller substructure called cores, which are the sites of the individual star formation or possibly binary star formation. So within these cores, they're gravitationally bound and they'll begin to collapse. And as they collapse, the temperature and pressure increases. And that's when you get something called a protostar, which has sufficient density to carry on collapsing. But
okay, and that's not quite a star yet.
Not quite a star. It's not got enough mass and the temperature is too low a temperature to be a star, a proper star. And because everything in the universe is spinning, you end up with an accretion disk. So there's matter falling onto the disk, and then it moves through the disk and onto the star, and the star increases in mass and it keeps collapsing and getting denser and hotter, and the pressure increases, and then eventually you get to a temperature sufficient that hydrogen fusion starts, and that's when your star is a star. It moves on to what's known as the main sequence.
Okay, so how long does all this take? How long does it take to create
it
a star?
It takes of the order 10 to the 5 years, so 100,000 years.
Okay, and is this the standard model? Is this the current, well,
this is the currently accepted model for sort of low mass stars, so things below 8 solar masses.
And you're working on above 8 solar masses?
Yeah, so the massive stars or the high mass stars. When I say massive, I don't mean size-wise, I mean mass, the amount of matter.
And at that, well, mass, do any problems occur in the standard model?
When you get to stars above 8 solar masses, which is what I study, the sort of this model breaks down because the stars should start fusing hydrogen before they reach their final mass. The fusion, the energy created during that, should tend to repel the accreting matter. So it should stop accretion happening, so you know, it can't get any bigger. Except stars up to about 100 solar masses or more have been seen, and they're the extreme size, so you get things like 8 to 10 and 20 all over the place. So this halting to accretion is quite a big problem in that we do see these stars, and this is what makes it interesting to study. There are a couple of theories which could allow these stars to exist, so you could have higher accretion rates, so you'd have the same kind of formation mechanism, but the matter's falling onto the star quicker, so you grow faster and you end up with a bigger star before it has its chance to start radiating. There's something called competitive accretion, because massive stars tend to form in the middle of star formation clusters, so the gravitational potential in the centre would be higher, so there's more matter falling in, which is similar to a higher accretion rate. There's just more available matter, which would give it the chance to accrete this matter. And then there's the exciting idea of two sort of medium-sized stars hitting each other and forming one massive star.
Okay. So since these are so far away from us, what methods do you use to survey them?
Well, the typical massive star formation regions are further than 5 kiloparsecs away, which is quite far away.
And what is a parsec?
Parsec is 3.0856 times 10 to the 16 metres.
Okay.
And a kiloparsec is that times 1,000. So these stars are forming within these giant molecular clouds, which are dusty, and so therefore obscure our ability to see them in the optical light, which means we have to move to different wavelengths. So where I work primarily is with radio observations. I work on something called the methanol multibeam survey, which is using something called a maser to act as a signpost for massive star formation, because there's this particular species of maser, methanol masers, which are uniquely associated with massive star formation. So if you find one, you've got a massive star forming nearby. And so we, a few years before I started my PhD, set about using the Parkes radio telescope down in New South Wales in Australia to survey the entire galactic plane looking for these methanol masers. And we have now completed the survey with Parkes, and we found 300 new ones and surveyed over 800 existing ones as well. So
how do you find masers in the sky?
So we just used the radio telescope down there, set up at a frequency of 6.7 gigahertz, which I think comes out at around 4 centimetres at wavelength, and you just track across sections of the galactic plane and wait for the signal of that particular frequency to be picked up.
Okay, and what is a natural maser?
So a natural maser, in an astrophysical sense, it's a region of the interstellar medium which is acting outside of local thermal equilibrium, which is getting into dangerous degree-level science, which basically acts as an amplifier for particular wavelengths of radiation. So if you think of it as like a laser, but with an M, so instead of light amplification by the stimulated emission of radiation, think microwave, even though that the maser name does cover objects like the methanol maser that are radio.
Okay, so where are you hoping your research leads you?
Well, I'm currently using the methanol multibeam survey data and some infrared data using the Spitzer Space Telescope, and also some molecular data that we took again down in Parkes. This was of the ammonia molecules emission at 23 gigahertz, from which you can effectively take the temperature of the molecular environment.
Okay.
So combine all those things and try and build up a picture of the environments of these forming massive stars. And through this, hopefully try and give some idea of how the stars are forming and build up a picture of the actual formation mechanism.
Okay. Thank you very much, Adam, for coming to talk to us today.
Thanks.